Hello, fellow travelers, and welcome to the Traversing the Stars podcast. Today's special guest is Cary Jones. You know him as the practical effects genius behind many of your favorite movies and shows. He now plays Black Kersantan in The Book of Boba Fett. Now come join me as we go traversing the stars. Hello, Mr. Jones. Thank you so much for coming to the Traversing the Stars podcast.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate you.
It's totally my pleasure. So you are awesome. So many things you do have been part of my tryout and growing up, so thank you so much.
Yeah, of course. No, it's my pleasure.
So I always like to start off with the question of inspiration. So what inspired you to get into work in films, and who were your earliest influences?
As a kid, I just liked watching movies, you know, just to kind of inspire me and allow me to escape, you know, into a world that wasn't in front of me. So, you know, Star Wars was one for sure, you know, and then, Superman, the original Superman, George Reeves was one. It was just a form of escapism for me as a kid.
I mean, you've done so many things in the realm of film. I mean, you've been in makeup effects, supervisor, you've been a stuntman, you've been a special effects technician. I mean, how do you train for all those different jobs? Because they are varied, they are complicated, and you do all of them.
I'm not going to say that I knew what I was doing the first time I did all of them. So some of those, it was just trial by fire, learn being thrown in the deep end. With luck and opportunity, I did pretty good. But I think it's just, you know, paying attention to what other people do, being willing to get, notes and criticisms and constructive criticism, of course, but just be willing to listen and just being a fly on the wall and looking at what other people do before I would do it was a lot of that.
So how did you get used to criticism? I mean, a lot of people, when they get a critique or something negative, they really do get knocked on their ass pretty hard. How do you get
purchased? I'm not used to it. I was used to it. I would accept it, but I'm not used to it. You never can be. I mean, being an artist is, you're very vulnerable. You're putting something that's very personal to you out there for the whole world and for everybody to look at. And you're leaving yourself open for people to criticize. Some people will criticize you to make you better. Other people will criticize you just to kind of, for shock value. I think the trick is just to kind of pay attention to the ones that'll help you and turn your back on the ones that won't. But I don't think you ever get used to it.
So of all those things that you do, like I said, effects supervisor, stuntman, technician, all that stuff, is there one area that is more of your passion than the others?
No, I think it all is. You know, I'm just a general fan of movie making. You know, I mean, I started as a kid just making myself up and doing, goofy movies in my house with my dad's camera. So I think just being a part of it in any capacity is fun for me. You know, I mean, mega effects, and it's passionate for at the time that I'm doing it. When I'm doing mega effects, that's my love. When I'm wearing a suit or, you know, playing a Wookiee, that's my love. I mean, I think it's just all of it. I love all of it.
And I mean, you worked on so many high profile projects. You've been, you're a part of Lovecraft Country, Watchmen, Suicide Squad. What did the experience on each of these sets teach you about the craft you were concentrating on?
Each one has definitely given me a new idea because I'm not, you know, all of them are different in that they ask you to do things that possibly you haven't done before. So what our job is in mega effects is basically we're problem solvers. You know, and there's always a new problem to solve, especially when you're on a show and they're asking for things that they haven't visualized before and you haven't done before. So it's really your job to sit back and try to figure it out and come up with ideas. And maybe you take something that you've done in the past and kind of update it and implement it in another way. But yeah, it's about problem solving, you know, and I think it's that's the part of your brain that you will that we all use the most. And each one of those projects brought it to that, you know, in terms of Love Cup Country and the crazy things that were written and that needed to be done practically and Watchmen, like especially with Dr. Manhattan, you know, trying to figure that out. So you know, and the problems that were put in front of us that we had to implement and try to make the best thing to put on screen. But that's really all we are. We're not all, but we're problem solvers. We're the ones that try to figure out what's written and make it a reality.
You know, I think what I really liked about what you said right there was that, and you're very much right, when you make a new film or a new television show, whatever they ask you to do is usually the first time that's ever been done that way, because once again, it's the first time that movie's been made with this character or that character, and you have to figure out how to do it. Is that more exciting or more stressful when you get a project and they're like, yeah, just do this one thing? And once again, I'm sure they don't even know if it can be done, but they just trust that you can figure out how to do it.
Well, it's both. It both of those feelings you go through. In the beginning is exciting because you have a team of people. We have a team of people at K&B and we all get around and we all throw out ideas. And that's the fun part, like being creative and people ping-ponging ideas of each other and say, maybe we can do it this way. Maybe we can do it that way. And then once you settle on an idea, that'll work. And then you start constructing it and putting it together. You start seeing it. And then the stress comes in is when you're on set. And so everything that you said that you can do, now you got to do it. And you got everybody on set staring at you, you know, excited for what's going to come. But ultimately, you know, you're like, you're on stage, you know, you're like a magician standing on stage. And imagine if you're like Don Lanning or somebody up on stage, and that's old school magician, but if you're up on stage and you're a magician and one of your tricks doesn't work, and you got several hundred people staring at you while you try to figure it out. And that's basically what it is. Like, it's a trick that we're trying to pull off. Yes, it's not done live on stage, but all the director, crew members, producers, they're all staring at you and trying to, you know, watch you pull this thing off, because you gotta come through for them, because ultimately those are your clients. Those are the people that you've been hired by. I mean, the audience too, but right in that moment, it's the director, producers, all those people that you gotta, you know, make happy. So that's where the stress comes in terms of, like, you know, but you know, for, I would say, you know, if you had to put a percentage on it, it's 70% fun, 30%, you know, and you're stressed out, hoping that it all works.
Now, when you take on a new project and you say you're going to do it, are you confident immediately that you can do it? Or is one of those things that you say you can to figure out later how you're actually going to figure it, you know?
I think when you take on a project, you're confident that you can do it right away. I mean, there's always ways to do things, you know? I mean, and again, I think everybody understands that. A lot of times, even writers write, you know, just because it jumps off the page and it makes sense to what they're writing. But they understand that what they write to some degree will be a little different when you see it practically, and they're fine with that. I mean, they understand. You try to get it as close to what the vision was on paper that you can, but practically, you know, there's things that just has to change to make it real, you know? So yeah, I think we take on every project knowing that we can create something that'll be cool. And there's a solution to all of it. Again, you know, whether it's, you know, a better idea for us to do it, or a combination between us and visual effects, or all visual effects, you know, there's definitely a way to figure it out and do it.
Have you ever heard something that they wanted you to do that's just sounded so crazy at first until you've actually worked it out? You're just like, holy, how the fuck is this going to happen?
What was the weirdest thing you heard that you were like, I don't know if this is possible. Let me figure, I really got to bear down on this one.
There are so many. I think all of them seem crazy at first. I guess the one that comes to mind right away is we were doing Drag Me to Hell, and I was working in the shop, and Greg Nicotero came down and was like, hey, man, we have to make this girl's nose bleed, but not bleed like drip bleed. It has to like projectile bleed like a fire hydrant across the room. We want to do it practically. And, sounds easy enough, but it wasn't. It was trial and error, and a lot of trial and error. And then we finally came with something and rigged something that worked, on the actress. But yeah, I mean, almost everything that we do sounds crazy when you first hear it, or they first ask us, it sounds crazy, maybe to others, not to us, because we've been asked to do some crazy things. And
right.
For us, it's fun. It's like, oh, wow. Okay. That sounds cool. We'll figure that out.
Yeah.
But to the person that's not in our world, and they hear those things being talked about, it's like, what? You're trying to do what? It can sound a little weird.
I mean, I think it's really cool is that as movies become more CGI heavy, I find that people still prefer practical effects on film, because there's something, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you know what it is, that where people feel more drawn to a practical effect character than a CGI character. And I think, without dropping too many, like in Star Wars, people really do prefer the practical effect creatures, I think, than a CGI, something about them. Why do you think that?
I think that it's kind of like a, there was practical effects because there was no such thing as visual effects, and certainly, well, there were visual effects, but of what we know of them now, back then they were different when you would say visual effects. Now it's when you say visual effects, it means computer. That didn't exist way back when, and then there was a time where, hey, this is the new shiny car. Let's everybody use it. But then they realized that. And then they realized that, that new shiny car is expensive, and it doesn't always look good, and it doesn't always make sense to drive it around all the time. And I think that's where we're leaning back towards, visual effects and computer animated effects are great when used for certain things, and then they're not so great when used for certain things. And I think that people are becoming wiser to that fact. And I think that, for audiences and actors, that for actors that physically have something in their face when they're on set to react to, look at, their performances look real. You can always look at a movie and tell, even people that are not in our industry that can tell. I've went to the movies with people, or even my son, who doesn't really know about that stuff, and he'll literally say, "Dad, that wasn't there, was it?" And I was like, "Actually, it wasn't." And he'll tell me, "Oh, because I can tell it looks like that actor's like looking over there, or it's like the thing's floating." Like, he'll say stuff, and it's like, and it's not me prompting him. He'll just say it, even from when he was little, and even other friends and people that will ask me that, and I think there's just something about the audience. It takes more to fool them now, because again, back then computers were not, everybody didn't have a computer. Everybody can do, some sort of, VFX graphic on their phones now, so everybody knows what it is. They know what to look out for. They know how it's done. So it's harder to fool them. So when you're looking at a movie, they can tell if it's physically there, and if it's not, a lot of times they're out of it. I mean, some stories and some movies call for it, and that doesn't really have that much of an effect. But I think now, especially with like Star Wars, I think that, people know, and also too with the practical stuff that they have in The Mandalorian, especially it's nostalgic. I think the people that remember the original trilogy, it makes them feel like they're back home, they're back to that. And then the people that are new looking at it, it just feels like something tangible, like they can touch that it was there on set. And there's something, more interesting about that,
Yeah, I mean, I am amazed that I really do think, like, the human mind and the uncanny valley effect, it's amazing what the brain picks out on the CJ, where you can always tell it's not right. It never moves right. There's always something about practical effects that always looks real. CJ always seems to never move quite right. And the skin never moves quite right. The eyes never move quite right. And I think your brain does kind of go, I don't know about this, you know?
Yeah. And I think, again, like I said, when not done right, of course, and not put in the right use for the right reasons, I think that's exactly what it is. Like you look at it and you start looking at what's wrong with it, and it takes you out of the movie itself.
Yes, 100%.
And that's basically what happens. But when done good, you know, you forget about it. I mean, listen, there's been movies that are CGI that are freaking phenomenal, but not anybody has to have the budget and the bandwidth to create that, you know? So then it's done fast or it's done cheaper or whatever, and then it shows, you know? But I think, I personally think that we're kind of moving into this world of sort of more of a, you know, a sort of amalgam between the two, where you use a hybrid of practical and mega effects, which, you know, we do that a lot in Walking Dead and other shows. And I think that's the way to go, honestly.
And I think, once again, a great example of that is the original Jurassic Park that had the practical effects and the CGI effects. And I do think that was one of my favorite movies was Jurassic Park and how they handled that.
And it was seamless. I mean, and sometimes you had the animatronic dinosaurs and they would just add the tail to it, you know,
right,
or add the leg, you know, and extend it. Whereas, so it was, again, it was a combination. And there were times where it was full because it called for it. You know, you can't make a animatronic, T-Rex run around the field. I mean, so it makes sense. So that stuff makes sense. I think that was, and that's that way. And listen, that movie is the one that sealed the deal. Once that movie came out and everyone saw it, then everybody was using visual effects after that. It was like, it just kind of took off, which is fine. Like I said, I don't mind it. I think that it's definitely a tool that can be used to make what we do better. You know, I mean, it certainly helps us out in a lot of situations. Things that would hinder us now helps us.
Well, I mean, I read that you actually work with Stan Winston in his studio. I mean, that must have been a hell of an experience to take part in.
I did. Yeah, I worked there for several years. Yeah. Yeah, I worked on a lot of projects there and had a lot of fun. He was a great man. I enjoyed it. Enjoyed it a lot. I learned a lot there. Learned a ton from him.
So you most recently played, I'm going to get the name wrong, Black Kersantan?
Black Kersantan.
Kersantan. I'm so bad with names, and that was a rough one. Kersantan. So you played Black Kersantan in the Book of Boba Fett television series, which was, to me, phenomenal. And I think the character Black Black Cab. I'm calling Black Cab, but apparently it's something.
Call him Santo. They call him Santo in the show.
Santo? All right, we'll call him Santo. And I thought the Book of Boba Fett was fantastic. And Santo became an extremely popular character. I mean, he took off almost immediately when he got on screen. So how did you get involved with the Book of Boba Fett? And were you, you already said you're a fan of Star Wars prior, but how did you get involved with this project?
Well, yeah, to answer your question, yes, I was a huge, I am a huge Star Wars fan. I was since I was a little kid. You know, I used to try to always get the paraphernalia, the Star Wars lunchbox. I think I had some Star Wars bed sheets. I even had Star Wars curtains, I think, and a pillowcase, you know, cereal, anything that came out that my parents could afford, I tried to do my best to get. So there you go. I'm absolutely a Star Wars fan and always have been. In terms of Kersantan, you know, that was, you know, really, you know, it was right place at the right time. It was, you know, Greg was the Nicotero. I was walking with him and he was on the phone with Robert Rodriguez and Robert wanted he knew the importance of his character and he wanted like a reference to someone that he felt that would, you know, do a great job. And like I said, I just so happened to be standing next to Greg when Greg was talking to Robert. And Greg goes, "You remember Carrie?" Because I had worked with Robert on Predators. And he was like, "Oh, yeah, that's right. You know, he's in Predators." And, you know, and then Robert called me a few days later. And then we talked. And You know, we talked about, you know, Predators and what I did on that show. And he was like, and you know, and in that, and he basically, you know, talked to John and Filoni and all those guys and was like, hey, I have a guy for this. And so then blah, blah, blah. Then, you know, I had to, then I had to talk to those guys and put together a really quick, demo reel that I did like in ridiculous amount of times. At the time, I didn't really have a current one. And then, yeah. And then after that, it was on, you know, I went for fittings and all that stuff and did my research and figured out, you know, who this guy was and his backstory. And, you know, I started doing little, you know, every time I would go to Legacy to do like a fitting, I would just stare in the mirror and just figure out how he walked, how his mannerisms and what I wanted to do with his eyes. Cause I knew that was really the only thing of me that you would see. So I really tried to, you know, be expressive as I could with my eyes and my looks and how I look at people. So, and that was like, that was like at least, you know, I started training. So I was at least like two months in the making, 2-3 months in the making prior to me actually being on set.
Well, I mean, the interesting thing too about Santo is that, once again, everyone who knows Book of Boba Fett knows he's a Wookiee, and everyone knows Chewbacca the Wookiee is like the Wookiee that everyone knows. He's the one that really people know from the movies. So when you decided to play Santo, did you look to Chewbacca for inspiration ideas of Peter Mayhew did? Did you want to make sure you differentiated him from Chewbacca? What parts did you think to borrow? What parts?
I didn't really, because again, he has his own take on it, which is amazing. And it's so iconic. And a lot of times, you know, there's no way, in my opinion, there's no way to recreate that. Mm-hmm. He created something that's so iconic and that was his take on that character. That was him. And I personally think that if I did try to copy it, you know, then everybody would have said, oh, you fake Chewbacca. You know, like, I didn't want to go that route. So I didn't. Right. I mean, I know all the movies backwards and forwards. I've seen them so many times. I know every scene. I can literally recall every single scene, everything that he did. So there's not much research I would have had to do other than just my own memories, because I've seen it. I know it, you know.
Mm.
But I think more for me, and also, too, they have different backgrounds. You know, they have different histories. So I think that's also why I didn't want to copy that, you know, first and foremost, because again, Peter Mayhew Chewbacca that's untouchable to me in my eyes. I mean, maybe other people might, but in my eyes, that's untouchable. You know, he's iconic. He did it. Chewbacca's solid gold. I'm not going to try to pull anything from that. And then secondary to that, again, Kersantan he's just a different Wookiee. He had a different background. He didn't have, you know, not psychic. He's a psychic, but he didn't have like a Han Solo or you know, he doesn't have a lighter side to him. He's not that nice. So he's always pissed. Always. Well, he might work with you and not beat you to a pulp, but it's only because you're paying him. You know, the moment that you stop paying him, and it could be different real fast.
Well, yeah, I read a really kind of cool story that Peter Mayhew's wife welcomed you to the Wookiee family in like a Twitter post. Was that something that you had heard about, and what was your reaction?
Actually, I didn't. Someone showed it to me, because I don't really traverse the social media a ton, so I didn't see it. Someone actually showed it to me on my phone, and my son had to show me how to actually repost it, but. yeah, I it was amazing. She didn't have to do that. It was very sweet. You know, it was very encouraging. I think that, you know, anytime you have someone that been so close to that character for so long, I mean, she knows it, she's been around it for so long, and for her to kind of acknowledge me, you know, was big. She, like I said, she didn't have to do that, you know, and also too, I'm flattered that she actually watched it. That was huge. It meant a lot. It meant a whole lot.
I mean, I think it was so cool. And I think Santo, it's such a great addition to the Star Wars universe. Because once again, it's a different view of a Wookiee that we only had one idea of it prior to really Santo. I mean, I'm sure there was the comic book ones, but for the most part, it's just the one. And I think, yeah.
The one that you've seen practically for so much. I mean, you've seen blurbs here and there, but none of them were really, other than Chewie and Santo, none of them were really, you know, such main characters at all.
So you're obviously, you're acting underneath all that, costume effects and all that other stuff. How did you determine to act like, and think about how you're going to perform this? And did you have acting training prior to taking on the role of Santo?
Well, I mean, I've been in suits before many times prior to this. So I had a feel of performance and I'm very aware of my body and what it does and what it looks like and all that stuff in my face. And I think really about performing inside of a suit is you gotta be aware of like, again, your body and your face and what certain things look like. And it's a lot of it's about feel, because sometimes you can't see this situation. I could see perfectly fine because it was, like I said, it was my eyes, but a lot of times you can't, and it's by feel. And sometimes sounds weird, but you have so many layers on that you can't necessarily feel your body. So you got to know kind of where things are, or how, you know, in order to make a certain look like you're doing a certain thing, you got to look a little further than you're used to, because you're pushing through layers of foam and hair and armor, you know. So it takes a lot of that and just practice. Like I said, a lot of it was just me sitting and looking in the mirror and walking around Legacy whenever we do our fittings, you know, which anytime they needed one, I'd be like, yeah, let's do it. Cause it helped me try to get used to it. Cause I think the more time you spend in something prior to shooting, the better, because your body is going to have a moment of shock. Cause you have this thing on. If you do it the first day, it's going to be your body's going to be like, get me out of this thing. So the more you wear it prior, the more comfortable you are. So that's also why I wanted to do it. And like I said, just to kind of look at myself in the mirror and just, you know, I would look a certain way. I would tilt my head down. I would stand up straight. I would kind of do certain things and move around and lift and do whatever and see what it felt like and looked like. And so that when we finally did our first screen test, I think I was about probably 80% there. And then the rest kind of Robert was like, then he was like what he liked and didn't like. And he made suggestions and then we kind of worked the rest out that day. And then we had the final reveal after that, you know, when we revealed it to everybody else in person, you know, like Favreau and Filoni and all that, you know. And then after that, we were on set shooting, you know. And once I got on set, just the giggles and everybody looking at it, and the excitement was pretty great, you know.
And I mean, the last episode of Boba Fett was really intense. I mean, that was a hell of a action sequence that they had in that last episode. I mean, it really did build up to a phenomenal climax. How long did it take to choreograph that whole section for you?
You know, the good thing about working on that show is that they previs everything, which I think is very vital, because trying to figure that out on the day or try to choreograph that and not kind of know specifically what is going on top to bottom, it makes it harder, takes longer. But they literally, I was able to walk up and they sent me a video of the entire sequence. So I walked on set knowing kind of, okay, this is going to happen. And yeah, of course, when you finally do it and you rehearse on the day or the day before, I can't remember when we rehearsed it, there's certain things that they tweak because they're still trying to figure out where they're going to set the cameras out. But ultimately, the sequence, you know, I'm aware of kind of how it's going to go, which made all the world a difference, you know. And then the rest, you know, once we do that and we do a walkthrough of kind of the beats and we kind of hone in on how we're going to do it practically, then it's just a matter of doing it. And then that also, you know, makes some changes, you know, because I think originally in the previs, I was carrying like three people. I had like two people on my shoulders and one I had under my arm. And I was like, unless you got wires out here, I can't carry three dudes like that. I mean, I'm flattered you think that I could, but practically with the cinema and stuff, I can't. But I did have one guy that I was carrying on my I think my left shoulder, and there's another guy that I was like kind of dragging behind me, you know, hold my gun, and I, you know, and the stunt guys are sold a lot of that, you know. Those guys were great, you know. And JJ Dash and all, like, his guys, like, they took punishment, you know. They got beat up, but they made it look great. They sold all of it.
So is there a chance, or have you heard anything about we're going to see Santo again sometime soon?
Listen, I hope so. I honestly hope so. You know, maybe if the fans say it loud enough, it'll happen.
I would imagine. I mean, I know there's already coming out with comic books on about the guy, and you know, more stuff going on about the character. He is. I mean, he became, I think, out of Boba Fett, one of the most popular characters since Grogu, in my opinion, like the character that everyone was talking about when he premiered.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It has been. I mean, it's been pretty crazy. I mean, it's been great though. You know, I mean, the fan response. I mean, you never know with Star Wars. You know, the fans are very, you Nicole? Know, yeah, they can be. And the thing is, I was one. Like, listen, before I was in it, I would see Star Wars films and be very critical. Like, what are you doing? Da, da, da. That's not the force or whatever. So, you know, but so I all but expected it. So part of it is that I was really nervous, you know. I didn't want to watch it with other people in the room. So I had to watch it by myself first before anybody else I watched it with, because I had to see it and feel like I was okay with it. And even then, there were certain things. I was like, God damn it. I should have did this or that. Someone's going to point that out, you know. And so, you know, I'm critical of it. And so I avoided, like, really wanting to talk to anybody about it for a while. I was very shy about it. Oh, man, I saw it. Okay, cool. I got to go over here. You know? But once I saw that, the overall feeling of him was very cool and people liked the performance and, you know, and all that, you know, that I was able to kind of embrace it a little bit more, you know, so, so it's been good.
Were you surprised by how positive the reaction was? I mean, when you did the character, did you know this character is going to be the one that people remember from Boba Fett?
No, I personally, like I said, I'm just, you know, as an actor, I'm just critical. I mean, they kept saying it, like Favreau and Filoni, they were like, dude, this guy's going to be, oh my gosh, he's going to be iconic. And I was like, okay, just, you know, if I don't mess it up, yeah, you know. So that was always my feeling. So I felt like the onus was on me, because you could have this awesome bitching character, but if he's just sitting there looking like, you know, then it's like, what the, he looks cool, but Jesus, you know, get him out of here, you know. So I mean, it happens in movies, you know, you have this character that could be cool, but performance isn't good. So he, you know, they felt it, but I just was like, I just wait until we're done. And then, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I really thought he was awesome. And like I said, I think for me, he was one of the best parts of the Boba Fett TV series. And I do hope they bring that character back. Cause like I said, he was really badass. And I want to thank you, Mr. Jones, for spending your time talking with me. You're awesome, and what you've done is awesome. So thank you so much.
Thank you, man. It was a pleasure. Absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much. And like I said, please come back whenever you do something. You're working on your next project.
Sounds great, man.
Thank you. You too.